two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
And welcome to Hour 2 of the Greenhouse Show on a beautiful Saturday morning, Father's Day weekend. And sitting in for Maria Chaleos this morning, I'm Dave Meekham, and of course alongside Ton Bettis. Well, figuratively, we decided, right, Ton? We are not in the same physical location.
Oh, here we go.
There we go. There's Ton.
Yeah, we were experimenting, trying to figure out if we could get more mics hooked up. But anyway, yeah. So my levels are back up, and we're going.
Good.
But yeah, it's... figuratively next to each other on this one.
There you go. We've been talking a little bit about tomatoes last hour, and of course that's one of my favorite topics. A couple weeks ago when I was here, we were talking about the threats that tomatoes generally have. Unusually, a lot of plants, it's more so the critters that like them, but tomatoes, it's really more diseases, I think, that are the greater
threat.
It is.
You know,
tomatoes.
We've got a text in here that says my tomatoes are curling in all kinds of twisted, weird ways and are smaller than the older growth. Did I over-fertilize calcium? You know, what is it? And I'd actually suspect on this, and I know we're moving into that, we're going to talk about blossom and drop, but on this one, there's a disease called curly top, and what I'd recommend they do is Google USU and curly top. Look at that, and then the other possibilities are the aphids sometimes can do that, and then lawn weed killer damage, so 2,4-D damage. So 2,4-D damage, but there's just so many things that can go wrong with tomatoes that you're always wondering what happened this time, but it's so worth growing them because of how good tomatoes are later in the season.
Yeah, and you mentioned blossom end rot, and we actually have... a feature on that today we want to share with everyone.
We do. Sheridan Hansen was good enough to allow me to record an interview. And Sheridan, as we know from last week's program, grows lots of tomatoes. And she specializes in heirlooms. And one thing that she regularly deals with is this blossom end rot.
So blossom end rot is a really common problem, like what you said. It shows up all the time. And it's on the bottom of the tomato. So the new growth on the tomato comes from the bottom and it pushes up out of the bottom up to the sides of the tomato. And on that bottom portion, you'll start to see this really nasty looking kind of tan to brown to black spot that is just the kind of necrotic, almost lesion-like spot where, you know, you lose that color of the tomato, the tissue behind it becomes kind of hardened, and it just doesn't look appetizing. So there are a few things that can cause blossom end rot on tomato. Temperature is one of those things. And where we've had really cool temperatures, that is one thing that can contribute to it. Really warm temperatures can contribute to it. Drought, when we have this dry kind of weather that we often get in the summertime, consistent irrigation can also cause it, and high nitrogen levels, I believe, can also cause it. There are a number of factors that contribute to it. So, I mean, you start to read about it, if you look it all up online, and it kind of becomes overwhelming. Everything I do is going to contribute to blossom end rot. So there are some things you can do to help yourself, though.
So what are your techniques for managing?
I want to make sure that there's a good amount of water in the soil and that it's consistent. So I set my clock, my timer on my drip irrigation system so that it goes off, you know, the same time every other day in my vegetable area. I want to make sure that I'm not letting that soil dry down too much. So I do have areas where I don't have a drip irrigation system, and I check the soil in those areas daily. And I may or may not water based on how much evaporation of that water I've had out of that soil.
And what about different mulches like grass clippings or bark mulch in controlling blossom end rot?
Yeah, so I use a lot of straw. You can use that in the garden really easily. I try and source as weed-free straw that I can find. Sometimes that can be a little tough. So every now and then you have to do a little bit of weeding, but it's not terrible. So any kind of mulch that you can put over the soil is going to help to keep that moisture in the soil and keep that consistent soil moisture level there.
So there are some other solutions out there that people commonly talk about. If you're on Pinterest or some of the Facebook gardening groups, I see recommended quite often to bury eggshells under the tomato or put eggshells around the tomato. Is that effective?
But for Utah soils, it really isn't effective. And that's because the problem isn't that we don't have calcium in our soil. So that's basically what people are doing. So blossom end rot is a calcium deficiency. That's why we see that necrosis on the bottom of that tomato, because we need calcium to help build cell walls. And if the plant can't move calcium to those cell walls, then those cell walls break down and we get that dead tissue. So people say, oh, well, it's calcium. I'm going to put eggshells down at the bottom of the plant, and that's going to fix everything. Well, our soil already has plenty of calcium in it. So it's not that the plant doesn't have calcium. It's that the plant can't move the calcium. And it usually comes back to watering and making sure that that plant has an even amount of moisture so it can move that big calcium molecule up through the plant. Because calcium isn't moved any other way but through the water vessels in the plant. So we have to be able to pull that calcium and move it, and that requires ample water. So, the eggshell myth is not necessarily true for our area. Plus, that calcium isn't even broken down from that eggshell into the right form, and even in small enough particles for our tomato to even take up.
What about the commercial sprays that will be just be either labeled calcium spray or blossom end rot spray?
I have seen a little bit of success with some of the foliar calcium sprays, but again, it's just correcting the problem in the moment. So you can do a foliar calcium spray. You can correct, you know, that problem at the moment in the leaves right next to the fruit, but then we've still got to correct the watering issue.
And so what is fertilizer's role in blossom end rot?
Excessive nitrogen can kind of exacerbate the problem. So just making sure that water is even. So if you have really heavy clay soils, you just kind of have to find this balance. And I tell people it takes a while to get to know your soil. If you've moved into a new place or if you're just starting to garden and you're having some issues with things like blossom end rot, give yourself a break and take a deep breath. And just kind of start to pay attention, because it takes a while to build that relationship with your garden and with your soil and to know how quickly things drain and to find that right kind of that pinpoint amount of water that you need.
Sheridan, thank you. And your knowledge is much appreciated, and we need to get you on the podcast and on the Greenhouse Show much more often. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Tom. This has been so much fun. I so appreciate you asking me to come.
All right. That's a great information, Tom.
Yeah. It's
a lot of good information there.
Handling blossom end rot locally is so different than what you would do in Oregon or on the East Coast.
Right.
Because our soils, unlike many other parts of the country, are up to 1/3 calcium. And so here, blossom end rot is just more of a factor of either temperature or irrigation. And the way around it is just to keep your soil evenly moist.
So one question would be, how much of a factor do the different varieties of tomato play in this? Some are more disease resistant, right? So,
yeah, well, it's not really disease itself. It's just the calcium.
Mm-hmm.
And just sometimes some rootstocks, you know, on the roots on some tomatoes are less able to move the calcium than others. And so you can have something along the lines of, let's say Early Girl or a Celebrity that gets less blossom end rot in it. And then you're growing this heirloom that the first part of the season, 2/3 of the tomatoes got it. And it's just it's not totally variety dependent, but that does play into it. And then as the season progresses, you get less and less of it. And so the first tomatoes are more likely, and then tomatoes are in late September are far less likely.
So that's another factor that can play into maybe the choice that you're making with the varieties that you grow. If you've had a problem with blossom end rot, that might be another way you can address it.
It really is. And so if you bought a variety and the tomatoes taste good, but every, you know, 2/3 of them have blossom end rot, maybe research something similar and try it just to see if it has less.
Okay, well, let's jump out and take a break here, Ton. And when we come back, we're going to take Sue's call. She's been waiting to chat with us in Salt Lake. If you've got a question, right now the lines are open. KSL Talk is the number. You can call in and we'll try and help you out as well. And 57500 is the text line. You can always reach us there as well. We'll be right back on the other side of this break with more of The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. I promise to take a call from Sue in Salt Lake, Tom. Let's do that now. Sue, how are you today?
Hi. Tom, I have a question for you. What do you think of Milorganite? My mother swore by it. She gardened in Portland, Oregon, and I can't remember what she used it for, or is it effective in Utah?
It's fine. It's just, I believe it's organic listed. And for organic fertilizers, it has a fairly high nitrogen content. It's used on golf courses quite a bit because of the dark color. It melts the snow off of the greens to help prevent diseases. So that's what it's, I mean, industry, that's what the main use is. But for homeowners, you can pick it up, I think, from IFA or Steve Regan, maybe Cal Ranch, and those sorts of stores, even maybe even Home Depot. But those are the main purposes.
So it's just used like a regular fertilizer.
Yeah, and because it's actually derived from, I think, human sewer stuff, but it's been sterilized. So it's safe to use, but because it's from a natural source, it takes longer to break down, and so you get a lot more even feed on the nitrogen instead of everything all at once and then nothing, and so it does last longer in the soil.
So is it good for flowers and vegetables?
It's fine. The plants honestly don't know. You know, if you used Milorganite or Scott's, as long as it's nitrogen, they don't care.
So it's just nitrogen.
Yeah, I mean, it's nitrogen and some other things. The advantage to it is because it's organic, it takes longer to break down, and it will keep your plants pretty without making them grow like wildfire.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Sue.
I'll think about that way. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
You go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's chat with Helen, who's calling in from Layton right now, and you're working with some annual grass.
Yes. It's really short, and you know, it'll come up like half an inch, and the first thing you'll see is a seed head. And we thought we got it out of the garden, but it landed in the lawn. It started underneath our big tree. You have a grass fades out at the end of the summer under a big tree. It got in there, and it's all the way through our lawn. And it these seed heads all the way through the lawn, and in June, it starts dying. And so you have all this brown stuff in your lawn. We tried a pre-emergent in, we put it down in March. It was for grass. And we thought that was going to work, but it hasn't worked. And we're wondering if you have any suggestions.
You probably have a grass called annual bluegrass. And it's related to Kentucky bluegrass, but it's almost like if Kentucky bluegrass were Jimmy Carter, annual bluegrass would be Billy Carter. So, so this one, you actually, the timing for the pre-emergent is in the fall, and you may need to reapply in early spring. The other things you can do is, I mean, if it's widespread, you may just have to live with it, but when it comes up and it's green in the fall or early spring, you may have to kill those out and reseed or resod those areas. But if you do that, you can't use pre-emergent.
Okay.
Annual bluegrass thrives in situations where it's just a little bit too wet. So it's really common. It commonly starts in shaded areas or places that have double or triple coverage from sprinklers. And so you may check your irrigation to make sure that you're not overwatering.
Okay. All right. So can you suggest a pre-emergent, the name of a pre-emergent?
Well, any ones that you would normally use in the spring, you can use in late summer. So Barricade or Dimension or Pre-Em, any of those would be fine. So if you were to stop by a local garden center, you know, you've got Valley and J&J close, you could talk to them about a pre-emergent and just store it, because they might have a pallet in the back room later on, but just store it and then put it down probably in late August, and that will help prevent the spread, but it won't get rid of what's already there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Helen. Good luck with that. We're coming up on the break here at the bottom of the hour, Ton, but there's a text here I thought we might chat real quick about. We got a texter with a pear tree that has four or five branches where the leaves, the ends of the leaves, are going black and curling up. Any ideas on that one?
It could be fire blight. I hate to just throw that out there because it kind of scares people, but I would look up USU Extension's fact sheet on fire blight. But we've been seeing a lot of an insect called Persilla, and it's Scylla, P-S-Y-L-L-A, that took a lot of brain power to remember how to spell. But P-S-Y-L-L-A, Persilla, is another one that has been causing a lot of dark brown to black on leaves, and you'll just see splotches of the leaves go black.
So it gets kind of ugly and kind of scary.
It does. And initially, it can just be cosmetic, and there are sprays out there for it. But if you also search online, Utah State University and Persilla, and that's P-S-Y-L-L-A, it will bring up the fact sheet and the pictures, and you can see what that looks like.
Right. And there, we're at that time of year where these things are starting to really cause problems.
They are. We're getting to a point that spittle bugs and a number of other things will start to rear their ugly heads. And the latest, you know, we see Persilla really bad every 4 or 5 years, and it seems like it may be the year for it again.
Well, okay, we'll chat more about that as we get on the other side of news, traffic, and weather. But right now it's time to break for that. But if you have a call, all our lines are open. KSL Talk is a line that will get you in. And if you want to text us, 57500, and we'll help you out here on the KSL Greenhouse Show. We'll be right back on the other side of news, traffic, and weather.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.